Okay, now here we go with 15. 15 is the Ernst. This is.
New generation?
No, older, much older generation.
Oh, okay.
This was before I came to MIT by quite a bit. There was a guy named Ernst who had made this ARM for the TX0. The TX0 was a very early computer. It was the first computer with a transistorized CPU. It was made at Lincoln Labs. There was a quick shot of the nameplate as we went by. And there is a picture of the TX0.
Uh-huh.
So this was the very first computer with a transistorized CPU. It was in Building 20. Here's a picture of it.
Piece of gold.
This large panel to the left here is the CPU.
Who built it? Lincoln Labs?
Lincoln Labs. It was originally called the memory test computer. It was Lincoln Labs built a 64K core memory, which was the largest in the world at that time. And that was called the S memory. The initial purpose of this computer was to do nothing other than to test that memory.
Okay.
Then, after that phase, they embellished it, added a few instructions, one thing or another.
I know you don't want to throw dates, but give me a rough date on this one. 55?
No, you'll have to look it up. These
All right.
are things that
All right.
can be checked.
Okay.
Not only was quite that early, no, I think it is in the 50s, though.
Okay. And is this the machine that's the beginning of the Deck Corporation? Is this the pre?
Well, in many ways it was. I mean, you have to get that story from Ken Olson and those guys. But basically, this was an 18-bit machine made at Lincoln Lab, and I'm sure those
and
guys
off in another direction from what UNIVAC and IBM and CDC and all those guys are playing.
This
is a smaller direction to play.
That's right. And it's really a different direction also from the TX2 at Lincoln Lab. When Lincoln Lab got around to making their real machine, it was a 36-bit machine called the TX2.
Uh-huh.
That's another story. Okay, anyway, what we see here is this left double panel, large thing, that's the CPU.
Okay.
That's the computer itself.
Yeah.
And it had 8K of 18-bit memory. This is the operating console area here. It had a CRT display, point plotting CRT, similar PDP-1. To the left of that is the switches register. It had 16 registers of 16 bits per switch. So, you know, you could actually have 16 words in memory where you had a switch to set every bit, and you could just, you know, toggle in a full program of 16 words and transfer to it and run, and that was that.
I actually did on a much later thing. I did the original boot program load on a PDP-8 with the address the address panel and line, and then the instruction
right.
thing, and then hit the load button.
Getting started on this on these early computers was a big deal because it required a lot of control logic. Control logic was real expensive, so they tended to cut corners. So that's right. In order to get the machine started from a cold start, probably the best way was to toggle in a thing. Although I was around in the TX0, I never actually used it myself, although I could play with that. So. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this next panel of switches here is, it switches and lights, is essentially the console, shows the AC and the TX0 had an index register. And then then off to the right here, which we can barely see, is the fluxorator. The main input for the machine was paper tape, and it had a fairly fast paper tape reader. However, for paper tape writing, it only used the paper tape puncher associated with the fluxorator, so it was only 10 characters per second.
Okay.
Paper tape punch, and the TXO also used the a variation.
But the fluxorator itself can write at 30, right?
No. The fluxorator can type at about 10.
At 10 also.
It's asynchronous though. It's not a teletype thing where it necessarily completes. It has a completion pulse type of thing.
Okay.
And so, you know, the carriage return, for example, takes a long time.
Have you ever seen any paper tape?
No.
Okay. Have you ever seen a teletype machine?
Not really.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Now this,
it's very, it's old.
This second panel, kind of in the middle here, was, this thing here was a tape drive, and it looks like it may have been, this picture was taken obviously several years before I came on the scene, but anyway, the machine
where's it physically sitting?
Oh, it's in Building 26. It was next door to the PDP-1 on the second floor of Building 26. Mm. It having been moved, of course, from Lincoln Lab.
Okay.
After Lincoln Lab, people got through with it. They gave it to MIT. Anyway, the over here to the right was a timing generator, and this was a full 19-inch relay rack full of vacuum tube delay lines, and sitting here in a rest was an oscilloscope, dedicated to the machine, and on this oscilloscope were little dots painted on the screen, you know, where the timing pulses were supposed to be. And when you started it up, sometimes it wouldn't start up right and so forth. There was a button you could sort of push and extinguish the pulse and again get it started. The way that
the dots off, do you have a pot that you tune the thing in?
Well, pushing that thing, the way it worked was that the delay lines were hooked in a circle. So there was just one pulse running around and around to define the cycle.
Okay.
And occasionally you might get either no pulses or two pulses running in that circle, in which case that's bad news. You had to just push a button for a minute and that extinguishes it, and then push another button, push the button again maybe, and it starts going. Okay, and then this panel to the right, again a floor-to-ceiling panel with three relay racks, that was a power supply. And the power supplies were also largely vacuum tubes. And had
what kind of power are they putting up?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the PDP-1 had plus 10 and minus 15 were the primary supplies. I don't know what they were on the Tixo, but probably
so it's in that range, anyway.
Something like that. It was enough that if you shorted it with a screwdriver or something, it would.
You'd notice.
A, you'd notice, and B, it was dangerous. It could fry a bunch of transistors in the air. So there's the.
This is a closer
thing of the console and the display.
Uh-huh.
And there's the paper tape reader. Here's the FlexoWriter. So here is this arm that Ernst built. He did it by taking a remote manipulator that had been developed for, you can see it here in the picture actually that there's a slave in the back. What this is normally
for radioactive
stuff. Yeah. So, right there you can see the command. Normally this is just servoed and it's a remote manipulator.
So this thing's fully functional because they've got walls where people are playing with radium. So they built this arm that's controlled from the outside, and this guy grabs one of these arms and sticks it on the computer.
Yeah, and re-interfaces it, and there was a quick shot of his rack full of logic to interface it.
And his name is Ernst.
Yeah.
And does he become recognized as a big name in the whole...
He should have. He did a PhD thesis and went back to Germany and never heard him again.
Okay.
And I never met the man. I did see this... this movie could very well be. Back in but even at that time, you see, it had been quite a few years. I mean, when I was doing this stuff here, it was 63, 64, 65, 66 kind of thing, and then further on. But I probably saw this tape sometime in the neighborhood of 66, 67 maybe. And, at that point, that had already been 8 years ago or something like that. You can look up and see exactly when his thesis was. But this was very, very early work. And it was also very good in a lot of ways.
Yeah. After I talked to you, I heard Rod Brooks talk the following day to some of the visitors.
Yeah.
And they're still chasing the arm problem.
Yeah.
I said, Rod, I was just watching some film from the 60s, and they were doing the arm then. Here we are 40 years later, nothing has changed. And I said, No, my hands are different. They're really different. They really are.
So here's, but the point of this thing, some of the good things about it was that it did have a relatively sophisticated force sensor, so that when it touched the ground, it could feel that. He also had a relatively sophisticated programming environment for it, which was a kind of a medium level thing, and it could sort of jump into unrelated code. In other words, in some of these demonstrations here, it's trying to do one thing, and you suddenly disturb it. You come in and you take the block away from it, or you hit it somewhere. Yeah. And it has a thing there where it can sort of just jump to an unrelated section of the program, which it hopes might possibly.
It's a free go-to.
Well, it's not a completely free go-to. I mean, it there's some smarts in the sense that it's trying to go to a place which will deal with
maybe.
Get back into. So
the sensor is sending a signal that is.
Yeah. See now here, for example, it pushed the block off. Well, in some cases, there was no vision connected with this. This is entirely.
Has he got an assembler language or something that he's using?
Yes, he had a couple different languages which you might.
But there's no compilers yet. Compilers aren't coming.
Well, it's interpretive and it's special purpose. So it's. But it actually was pretty good. He wrote a thesis, and so that's...
Okay, the big deal. Go look at the thesis, and we'll find the summary. This is the Ernst thesis should be associated with film 15.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, let's see. That was.
And this is very, very early work. This is using the Lincoln Lab primitive computer, one of the first computers of its type. After it comes to the MIT campus.
The first computer with a transistorized CPU.
Well, that's that in itself.
Yeah.
You know what it was before then?
Vacuum.
And that's where the word bug comes from, right?
That's right.
Okay, so anyway, that's more of it, and that's a good
thing. So this film was probably made in support of his thesis. I'm not going to say that. Yeah. Control mechanical app. There we are.
Okay, so that's 15. Okay, so now